Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Behringers, Investing.com's very own financial podcast. I'm Clément Thibault, senior analyst at Investing.com. With me here today, my good buddy and fellow senior analyst, Jesse Cohen.
What's up, folks?
We got a lot on our plate today. A bunch of things happening in financial markets. We'll be going at everything. 3 minutes, a bell will sound, and we'll move on to the next topic. So, Jesse, what are our topics this week?
Well, we'll kick things off with our thoughts on yet another wild and crazy week on Wall Street. We'll then talk about just briefly about the relatively strong recent batch of U.S. economic data. And finally, we'll also turn our attention to Brexit developments. And turning our attention for the week ahead, we'll talk about just where we see the market going in the coming days. We'll also touch on what's in store on the data front. And lastly, we'll also focus on the latest batch of quarterly earnings results, which include companies like Slack and Zoom.
Yeah, a bunch of IPOs that are reporting now. Super interesting. And of course, we'll close out the episode, like every episode, with our stocks of the week. Jesse's going to go with Palo Alto Networks, and I'll be going with Philip Morris. So let's get right into it. Last week was a bit crazy, but if we look at the big picture, the Dow Jones closed up 3%. The S&P closed up, 2.8%. NASDAQ, 2.7%. It was a good week overall.
Yeah, like I had a discussion with a friend last week, and basically we described it as a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde type of market, where one day, it's doom and gloom, end of the world. We're down 300-400 points on the Dow. The following day, we bounce back as if nothing happened. The trade war is over. 400 points, rebound on the Dow. So really, like you said, last week's market performance was impressive. We got some nice price action. The bounce back occurred.
Forget about the price action. We had a nice tweet from President Trump saying that there was a phone call with China. Was there a phone call from China?
Well, for the most part, the markets don't even care if there was a phone call or not. What we do know for a fact is that Trump said one thing. China did not confirm it.
And then Trump aides also said that there wasn't any call.
But again, for the algos, under normal human-driven market, then we'd have a much more rational reaction to these type of headlines. However, when you time it at 3 a.m. or 3:30 a.m. Eastern time, where it's literally just algos and computers trading against another, a bullish headline like that just pops across the wires, and we went from gap down open on Monday to a gap up open.
And the thing is that the week ended strong, so it's not that people corrected for it. So that means that the market seems to be taking Donald Trump's word over China's word. And honestly, given what we know about both, we both know, they're both somewhat reliable, but I wouldn't bet anything that, both are really going with it.
Well, it seems as if China from its end came and, kind of propped up the market, because they had the opportunity, had they wanted to retaliate and really, escalate the recent conflict to even worse places. However, they chose not to do so, and the market really welcomed that news, the fact that they didn't immediately announce a retaliation. So we'll just, I guess we'll have to wait and see really where both sides want
to
take
things. To me, I know exactly where Trump wants to take this. Trump wants to take this to a higher stock market, and it doesn't even matter to him if it's a lie, if it's half a truth. There might have been something to it. The best lies eventually are half-truth and not, outright lies. So I wouldn't be surprised if everything was overblown and it was just to get a nice week as far as Trump is concerned in financial markets. That's what we got. But, I'm really putting into question how reliable and how long will the market keep on believing Trump's Twitter not correcting to it.
I think last week pretty much proved that it's don't fight the White House. Don't fight the White House, and don't fight the president who's tweeting in the White House. That's it. Turning our attention to the U.S. data, which we had last week, which, again, continued to pour cold water on this notion that a recession is fast approaching. We had the U.S. economy grew at a 2% pace in the second quarter. Revised the GDP data showed, by all means, 2%, you know, a very healthy pace.
Yeah, of course. When you look at other economies, exactly, it's pretty evident.
Especially compared, you know, to Europe and other economies, like you said, you know, 2% growth is rather impressive, especially when you break it down. U.S. consumer spending was even stronger than we first thought. It was revised up to 4.7%. That's the strongest pace since the middle of 2014. So, again, you know, all this talk about recession, it's just not adding up with the U.S. Consumer in such a strong place. It's just not adding up to me.
And so what most people are pointing at, really, when you look at, you know, the analysis, is the inverted yield curve. Why we've been talking about it a lot. And that's the number one thing that people kind of fear, and even though the data says something else. Now, is that by itself a problematic sign? I believe it is, right? That's not the natural state of things. Now, is it likely that the market drops, you know, 50% sometimes in the future? Yeah, I think it is also. But does it mean that it'll happen next year or within 6 months? Not at all. Does it mean that, you know, the stock market might as go 50%, 60%, you know, up from here before we see a 50% drop?
It's all about timing. You know, everybody and their mothers have been on Twitter lately calling this the top, and the yield curves have inverted, so a recession is starting immediately.
People were doing the same in 2016, 2015. I remember that. It was also doom and gloom. And if you sold out then you missed out on a heck of a rally in the past 4 years.
Pretty much it's not about predicting when this recession, you know, comes. If it, you know, for all likelihood, a recession is coming. But again, it's all about the timing. It's not going to come tomorrow. The data certainly isn't painting that image. And again, you know, I feel like I've been repeating this for the past maybe 2-3 weeks on this podcast. I think the signals that we've been getting from the bond markets this year shouldn't be taken as seriously as they've been when these warning signals have flashed in the past. And that's simply due to the fact that bond markets are broken. Bond markets are broken. 10 years of central bank intervention have resulted in negative yields.
So you're saying that the inverted yield curve doesn't even necessarily point to a recession.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Given
yes,
all the
I've
money that's flowed
this,
in.
And I've been saying this for a while already now. The fact that the 2-year and the 10-year inverted, you know, it's not a signal of rational bond markets. It's a signal of a broken bond market, and really the Fed and central banks around the world for the most part have been the big contributors.
So I agree, but I wouldn't be so quick to dismiss something that has consistently worked. I agree with you that we're dealing with circumstances today that we haven't had in the past. But still, when you look at it just from a common sense perspective, and something doesn't make sense, just common sense, I'm not saying some deep analysis, then you know have a problem
there. All I'm saying is financial media, especially in August, once this inversion occurred, they've been flashing this every day. And, you know, every day I read it and I say to myself,
yeah, we aren't there, folks.
We're not there, folks. Exactly.
All right. So let's move on. We are leaving the U.S. behind for now because there's a hot topic in the U.K. And
it's like Brexit is finally back on the radar, thanks to one Boris Johnson, who has just decided to, you know what, I've had enough, and delay or no delay, a deal or no deal, we're heading out on October 31.
And the pound didn't like that one bit.
No, I read recently the pound is down nearly 7% since Bojo took over, trading at 3-year lows on fears that we will get this no-deal Brexit.
It took over, like, just now.
Yeah, it's been, literally been since June. So since June, the pound is down almost 7%.
So that's like 2 months and 7%.
Look at Donald Trump. If you want to devalue your currency... I mean, that's all perhaps what you need to do is doing Americxit.
Some political uncertainty.
That's for sure. I mean, I'm no UK political expert. However, I will be pleased. And for that reason, I guess I'm rooting for Brexit to finally come to an end. And I hope that on October 31st, we wake up to headlines flashing You know, UK has withdrawn from the EU without a deal, and let's see what happens.
So I understand really both sides, and on the one hand, right, there's been a referendum, they've voted to leave, there's no doubt about that, and right, it's been like 3 years. And the UK doesn't seem any closer to leaving the EU in an orderly fashion with agreements, with everything. They just never really got to anything. So are you saying at some point, you know, it's time to just debate it? And if we can't reach an agreement, we need to fulfill the will of the people. We can't just keep on delaying this forever.
If it were up to the policymakers and the politicians, I think they would just keep kicking the can down the road and keep debating and keep delaying and keep debating and keep delaying.
Wait, so is October 31st happening right now? Is it happening? Do you think it'll happen?
Yes. Deal or no deal, with Boris Johnson at the helm, Brexit is happening. And in essence, what we saw this week, his decision to go to the Queen and to ask to suspend Parliament, what was it, until October
14.
Till October 14, which would leave, what, 2 weeks until
the
end
day? Yeah, like 10 working days.
So if he wanted to, you know, just flat out say, all right, we're going to crash out of Brexit, he could have asked for a suspension until flat out the end of October. The fact that he did not, and he left two more weeks to debate, it was pretty much him saying to all the anti-no deal MPs in Parliament over there, all right, get your act together. You have 2 weeks. There's no more kicking the can down the road. There's no more delaying. If you want to get it done, get it done now.
Yeah, but really, when you think about it, this is probably the most important issue that the UK has faced since like World War II.
I mean, who
is now the time for a month vacation? Like, I know that Boris Johnson said that he didn't do that just to sabotage, you know, the Remainers.
Right, right.
But he totally did. There's absolutely no way that you just happen to take a month off during maybe the most critical period before, you know, the biggest political event of maybe the past century. That just doesn't make sense to me.
That's
so
for sure.
The pound will keep on getting pounded. You know, I guarantee that going into October 31. You're going to see that. You know, it's not going to be pretty.
I would not want to be Bank of England Governor Mark Carney right now, because he's got a lot on his plate.
He does. He does. So that's for last week, which was a pretty eventful week.
Another eventful week, which capped off an eventful month.
And yeah, and there's no stopping it right now. It'll just continue into September.
I
think that, you know, we're still talking about tariffs. We're going to be talking about tariffs until maybe Donald Trump re-election, or until the elections, you know, until the Democrats maybe take over. This is not going anywhere.
Well, the way the Democrats have been looking lately, I don't think they're going to be taking over anything. But that's for another topic.
That's another issue.
Different podcast. But yeah, like you said, really, August was volatile. September, you know, isn't necessarily expected to be any rosier for the S&P 500.
Well, we're starting the month with tariffs going into effect today.
Right, but the additional 5% tariff really kicked off they went into effect at midnight Eastern time. So we wake up tomorrow, Monday, with markets having to react to an increase in tariffs. People might have thought that maybe, you know, Trump would have shown some goodwill, and, you know, as a sign that you know, our trade talks with China are still scheduled for later this month, he might have backed off. He might have backed off on these tariffs. The fact that he didn't goes to show that, you know, maybe the trade war is still in this, you know, escalation phase.
Yeah. Talking about escalation, I saw a statistic, right? The average tariff rate on Chinese goods in the U.S. in the past 2 years went from 3%, that's all they were taking, 3% to 24%.
That's remarkable.
At the end of the year, it'll be 24. If everything goes as planned, you know, more tariffs in December, 24%. And on the other side, the Chinese used to put 8% tariffs on U.S. goods, and now the average rate is 26. So, I mean, if you don't think that you're hurting people and you're hurting the economy and you're hurting business, when you're putting 20% more each way, I mean, you got to be crazy to not see how that negatively impacts business.
And really, this latest round of the tariffs are more consumer focused. And a recent estimate from JP Morgan had this at $1,000 per year cost for every American household. So just something to look going forward. We spoke about the consumer spending figures being strong. So will the tariffs bring down the U.S. consumer? If that were to be the case, then we could talk about maybe the recession picture gaining more traction.
Yeah, I
agree.
But
definitely
with you.
Tariffs are not something that markets would welcome. And really, if we get any overnight retaliatory headline from China on Monday morning, then expect Monday to be
Monday's Labor Day.
Monday's closed, so Tuesday, expect Tuesday to be a rough day in the market.
But there's so much time for another Trump tweet saying something that may or may not be true.
Just like that phone call that may or may not have had happened. So again, we know the way the market works. We know the way President Trump works. And the fact that the White House wants elevated stock price or stock market and the fact that Trump would, willing to maybe lie or exaggerate the truth. Overall, should be a positive for stock markets going forward.
It's hard to short a market when a presidential tweet can get the market up 3%.
I had a discussion with that exactly with someone last week. With all that we dealt in, with all the bad news that August had, we only ended the month down around 3%. So with all that being said, it seems like the market, there's like a magnet to the upside. There's like a sticky, something is sticking it to the upside. And that someone is President Trump.
All right. So, word of caution, if you're short, you need to keep a close watch on everything that's going on because this market does not want to go low this fast.
But just to build on that, one last word of caution. September is usually the worst month for stock markets, and on average, the S&P is down 1% since 1937. Knowing what we know about September, you might want to take everything, maybe not an extreme being long or short the market, but definitely be reactive and reactive to volatile conditions rather being predictive.
All right, so that for our next week. And we have a few Fed speakers and some data next week. So the U.S. again on the agenda. We're going to have manufacturing. When's that exactly?
The ISM manufacturing reading comes out on Tuesday.
And then we have non-farm on Friday.
Yep. And we have the ISM services data comes out as well on Thursday.
And Powell speaks on Friday. But I want to open with something that's none of the things that we just spoke about. I want to talk about Boston Fed President Rosengren talking on Tuesday.
He's on the agenda. Yep.
And the one thing that's really interesting is that Rosengren was one of those people who thought that we shouldn't lower rates and we shouldn't give up to Donald Trump and that the data wasn't really there. So if I'm watching one speech this week, it's not Powell. It's Rosengren.
It seems like Rosengren is the guy that seems to get it the most on the Fed board lately. And we see that the market might be getting on board as well. I took a look at the investing.com Fed rate monitor tool earlier today. And for the first time in the longest, I don't even remember, we aren't pricing in a 50 basis point rate cut this month. For the first time in a while.
At all.
0%. 0%. 5% are even expecting a no change in the federal funds interest rate.
So it's 95 for
25 basis point rate cut, which seems to be right now the common thinking.
Yeah,
unless we get some pushback from Powell this week. Like you mentioned, he speaks Friday. If he wants to drop a bomb before the Fed meeting this month, that will be the time and that will be the place.
And the thing is that at Jackson Hole, we talked about it last week. I was happy with him because he kind of pushed back against the Trump agenda.
I
really want to see more of that.
Exactly.
I really want to see
more
of that.
With Jackson Hole, it seems like China just stole his thunder. It was that morning where Trump went on his tweet storm in response to China's announcement.
It was completely overshadowed.
So hopefully Powell, he goes in there and maybe he reiterates that message, sharpens it a bit. And really, if he does want to signal what the Fed is going to do at its September 17-18 meeting, then the speech this week would be the ideal place.
And from a data point of view, so we said we had manufacturing and we have non-farm, we have services, so it's a heavy week. Again, tying into the recession motive, I think a lot of folks are looking at manufacturing right now.
Right.
After
exactly.
Consumer spending was, you know, a lot above what we expected, and manufacturing is where it's at now.
And we saw reading last month where manufacturing actually went into contraction territory. So definitely be something to keep an eye on. However, like you say, we know that manufacturing has been a soft spot in the economy. We know that housing has been a soft spot. And so which is greater here? U.S. consumer spending, the U.S. labor market, which is at its strongest in nearly 50 years. So overall, you know, I like the fact that
to
the
me,
US consumer
is king.
Yeah,
consumer
is
king.
It's a consumer-driven economy. 70% of GDP growth is accounted from the consumer. And so, you know, manufacturing not being what it once was, this isn't 1960 anymore. You know, the fact that automation completely changed the field is something also that needs to be taken into account.
And do you expect any surprises with non-farm before we move on?
I think we'd get a solid Goldilocks numbers where the unemployment rate remains at 3.7%, so under 4% is very bullish. We get the jobs growth of above 160%, where it's not too strong, where the Fed, you know, you don't want to scare the Fed off with rate cuts, but it's not too low and too weak, where the market isn't freaked out by the strength
of
the economy.
So a manufactured number that everyone likes, just like in China.
Goldilocks. Exactly.
And we have a couple of recent IPOs that are about to report. We have Slack on Wednesday after the bell, and we're going to have Zoom video communications on Thursday after the bell.
Yeah.
What are you looking at for Slack? What are your expectations?
Well, I remember when we first spoke about Slack before the IPO, and pretty much I remember saying how I wouldn't touch this with a 10-foot pole. First of all, rising competition, especially from Microsoft. Microsoft Teams, which is its own messaging software, has 13 million users, whereas Slack, with its last update, only has 10 million users. When you break that down, you know, for Microsoft, that isn't even its core product. So the fact that it has 3 more million users than Slack, yeah, I mean, the valuation is nuts.
Anytime a company goes against Google, Microsoft, Amazon,
Facebook too,
you need to be afraid. That needs to be a huge red flag, and you need to consider that risk, because we fall in love with those companies. They've come to disrupt. They've come to change.
Yep.
They're the new age tech companies. But at the end of the day, money talks, and when Facebook, Amazon, Microsoft wants to kill you, it can take a loss on that product. Whatever is your core product is, Microsoft can take a loss, kill you, and then take over that industry,
and
which is exactly what they're doing.
And really, we've seen the market get this one right, in my opinion. Slack is down 23% since going public just a couple months ago.
Absolutely.
And even with the price drop, it's the stock is still trading at sky-high valuations. It's way more
There's
expensive,
at
in
least
my opinion, than what
30%
it needs to be.
Downside here until it's maybe reasonably priced. I'm seeing 30%. Fundamentally, I'm seeing 30%.
You know, earnings, you know, the losses per share are going to keep growing while revenue sales growth continues to slow down. You got competition rising from other places.
The conditions aren't great for Slack right now. If there's one number before we move on to Zoom, one number that I'll be looking at is the number of customers paying them more than $100K a year. It's something that they say, and that's, to me, the key growth number, because it really shows how Slack can take over an organization, and to succeed, it'll have to do that more and more. So that's the one critical number I'm watching. Now, Zoom? The profitable IPO, maybe the only big profitable IPO of 2019 that's done pretty well for itself.
And to go back and speak about what we said before the stock went public in May, you know, it was one of those names where, as opposed to the rest of these tech unicorns, which went public this year, this one actually made money since day one.
It's crazy, right? You're not used to that anymore.
What's, you know, the fact that, you know, it's actually in the green, it's generating earnings per share, and it's the revenue growth is accelerating. And basically, I view it as the cream of the crop in the whole video communication services sector, where we see this, you know, enterprises where employees are working more and more remotely. I think Zoom is going to be the name to go for enterprises and businesses.
So to me, it's really high risk, high reward. It's trading at 50 times its annual sales. 50 times. I mean, that's a lot of money to pay for a company that, while is making money, is still not very proven at a big, big scale.
Considering the triple-digit revenue growth and considering, you know, future potential for where this can be and what the market will be for video communication and telecommunication conferences in general, you know, the fact that the stock is up 160%.
So I'll tell you what I see. It'll continue to go up. Right? And 3 years from now, we're going to be back at where we are now.
Well, we should save and favorite this this Bell Ringers podcast episode.
Because right now, the stock is trading at such a high valuation, it'll have to grow at like 150% for the next 3 years to be somewhat reasonable. So I see it that it'll continue to grow up as long as the growth grows up. But at the end of the day, the fundamental will catch up to it, and we'll find ourselves where we are now. Back again.
Well, with the stock up 160% since going public, currently trading above $93. We'll see if the market has this one right.
All right. So, stocks of the week.
Let me kick it off.
All right. Go ahead.
I went with Palo Alto Networks, ticker PANW. Palo Alto Networks reports its latest results after the closing bell on Wednesday. The software security maker is expected to post earnings of $1.42 per share, which represents a year-over-year change of around 11%. Revenue is expected to come in at $803 million, which would be up 22% from the same quarter a year earlier.
That's pretty nice.
So it's a high value, high growth name. When we've seen momentum in this name when its reports earnings really come in. It has a history of beating earnings reports, and it's done so in each of the last 8 quarters.
So you think it beats this time around?
I'm bullish on the name. I'm bullish on its earnings report for this quarter. I've written about the stock recently, and to me, really, it's the cream of the crop within the cybersecurity industry. The fundamentals are still strong. It continues to grow in sales. And like we said with Zoom, I'll be looking for any indications and updates it gives on companies which are using its services, enterprises with more than $100,000 on their account.
Yeah, that a lot of times that's the key to a business.
A lot for these software enterprise names, exactly. That's the key metric. So again, I'm bullish on the name. And I think that
bullish calls worked out pretty well over the past few weeks, haven't they?
So far, so good.
Not jinxing it for you, buddy.
Exactly.
And I'll be talking today about Philip Morris. So there's been some news that Philip Morris wants to merge with Altria, which is funny because Philip Morris and Altria really used to be the same company
until a
decade ago where they split, where Philip Morris focuses on the international cigarettes market and Altria focuses more on the U.S. So there's almost no geographic overlap between the two. Philip Morris, the price is $72, which if you look at the chart long term, it's almost the price that it traded at 8 years ago.
Wow.
So in 8 years, the company did not go very far as far as stock appreciation. The dividend is there. The free cash flow is there. It's still more expensive than other cigarette makers, which is always, you know, it's kind of flattering for a company, but then it's more risk. But Philip Morris has always been more valued in terms of free cash flow and in terms of dividend, which is lower than its peers. If we want to talk about the merger, at the end of the day, I think that it might be a good move for the cigarettes maker because the environment is getting tougher and tougher.
You want to grab a share of that jewel.
It's exactly. And that's the new product for the new generation. It's very hard to bet against tobacco companies because at the end of the day, it's well known that addicts make the best customers and the most loyal customers.
All those kids nowadays, they're all vaping. Smoking that Juul. They're all vaping. That's the new thing.
So, yeah. So the dividend is, you know, if you're looking at tobacco companies, it's about 6 to 9%, which is in this starved world for yield. That's crazy. So if you're interested, take a look at tobacco companies. Altria, I think, is a good bet right now.
Would they potentially move into marijuana?
Well, you know, they should have like 10 years ago.
Why not?
That's been maybe the most wasted thing. But, you know, if they have enough cash on hand, might as well buy out, you know, some Tilray or some Canopy Growth. That would be nice.
Yeah, very cool.
All right, everyone. That wraps up our episode of The Bell Ringers. If you want to find us for feedback, you can find Jesse on Twitter at JesseCohenINV. You can find me at Clem Tebow, investing.com at investing.com. And The Bell Ringers Pod, we have our very own Twitter account, so go follow that as well. Rate us on the platforms wherever you're listening, Spotify, Apple. You know, let us know what you think.
Tune in, subscribe, let us know. Wishing you all
a great week, a great long weekend for you folks who are lucky enough to have Monday off. And trading on Tuesday. So have a great short week, everyone. Have a good Labor Day, and we'll see you next week.
May the trading gods be with you.